Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name is Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. Samsung has just announced a bevy of new smartphones in what is likely to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Android smartphone launch of the year. The company's latest unpacked event saw Samsung reveal the Samsung Galaxy S22, the Galaxy S22 Plus and the S22 Ultra. And it even had time in the packed one-hour keynote event to show off two Android-powered tablets, the Galaxy Tab S and the S8 Ultra, as well as a few other software announcements. Pretty jam-packed. But what should we make of the new product? Should we be getting excited, or is it all a bit, meh? Joining me to discuss all things Samsung this week is Pocalypse Chris Hall and Pocalypse Mike Lowe. And over the next 25 minutes or so, we'll be discussing the new phones, what's new, what's old, and what's changed, as well as our first impressions of the new handsets. Yep, we've already had a play. But before we get to Mike's initial thoughts, Chris, do you want to give us a quick run through of what's actually been launched this week?
Yes, I mean, you've done quite a thorough job in introducing us there. And as you say, we have a new trio of flagship phones. The Galaxy S22 family is here. Everything is now very nice and convenient that Samsung is naming them the same as the year, so we don't get confused about where we are anymore. So there's the small Galaxy S22, the slightly larger, but in terms of specs, pretty much the same S22 Plus. And finally on top is the S22 Ultra. This very much reflects what we saw last year with the S21, and they're kind of positioned in similar places, but it's the S22 Ultra that I think is going to get most of the attention because that's where most of the changes have come in, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later. And Samsung hasn't been the most regular with announcing tablets, but now it seems to have a renewed vigor trying to get into this space as a lot of people are doing. As we've all been stuck at home, there's been a lot more interest in tablets and larger devices. And so to see the Galaxy Tab S8 launched along with its Ultra companion, that comes as no surprise, really, because it means that you're going to have some bigger Samsung displays at home to get to grips with. Outside of that, there is a list of software and feature announcements, some of which aren't necessarily new. Some of them are. I mean, one of the things that I find really interesting about Samsung is that it's caught up with its software updates to such an extent that it's now launching these devices on the same software as its current devices, the S21, whereas in the past, these launches always came with new software. So that's a bit of a difference to previous years, which is quite interesting, but it is addressing that problem that a lot of people would always complain about, which was the speed of Android updates and things like that. So yeah, a lot of hardware announced, and that should see Samsung through most of the rest of the year. But yeah, this is the flagship devices all out there now.
Wow. And Mike, you've had a play.
I have indeed seen the whole bunch, the full six items. There's the one little one we've kind of failed to mention is on the tablet side, there's also the entry-level 11-inch, and then there's a plus version that sits in between that and the Ultra, which is the brand-new super massive scale tablet. And the three phones, the S22, which really very much sit in the sequence of what Samsung is kind of all about, to be honest. There's a lot of excitement around these launches, as ever. But actually, the S22 is really not dramatically different to the S21 in very many ways at all, to be honest. Right. It's slightly smaller, which is a bit of a peculiarity because it means it's slightly slimmer. You've got a slightly smaller screen, but you lose a bit of battery as well. So I think that might raise a few eyebrows, and we'll have to see how that actually kind of pans out, because at the smaller scale, it might be a little bit too small, but we'll see with that. And then obviously you go up the scale, things get kind of considerably larger. So the entry level one is a 6.1 inch screen. And this really seems to be, you know, what I think a lot of companies are doing this. There's been this moment of screens in phones over the years just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's kept going. And we kind of hit that kind of plateau of like, I kind of don't really want a bigger one anymore. Maybe something a bit more sensible and not small, small, not tiny, but actually just really usable in one hand. So that's kind of the approach of the entry model. And then there's the in-between is the Plus, which is 6.6. And then you go up into the Ultra, which is 6.8. But the Ultra is kind of a bit like the thought to be discontinued Note 20 Ultra in disguise. That's kind of my view of it.
And that's kind of, that was, you know, one of the first questions I have is which is best for who? Whom? In that kind of, you know, because you've got three, you've obviously got the 22, the 22 Plus and the 22 Ultra. Presumably they get better specs as you go up the scale, or they get bigger screens or what have you. But is there are there underlying processes all the same? Is you know the camera technology all the same? So it's really just a case about size.
They're fairly uniform. So I mean the cameras do change, but we can come to that in a bit. In terms of processor, yeah, they've stuck with the very same. So I think the message is you're buying a flagship product, you get a flagship processor. Interesting, in the UK, it's going to be Samsung's own, which is the Exynos 2200. We were very much expecting it to be Qualcomm, but that is reserved for the USA, which I don't know if there's a specific reason for that kind of choice. Could be supply and demand, but that's a bit of an unusual change compared to the norm. But, you know, side by side, those two processors should pretty much deliver exactly the same kind of performance levels. There might be small discrepancies between that if you super deep dive into what they can do and what they can't, but pretty much similar to the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1, which is what the USA will have.
Now, having watched the keynote, quite a big proportion of the keynote in sort of the grander picture compared to everything else was spent talking about Samsung Note and the S Pen and its ability to do lots of things with AI and all those kind of stuff. Is this just a Note in disguise?
I love the fact you called it the wrong thing. So the note name kind of sticks, doesn't it? So when I previewed it, I took a Note 20 Ultra along with me, and putting that next to the S22 Ultra, they're very, very, very similar. Like front on, you could probably barely tell them apart. Same kind of scale, same kind of screen size. Same when you flip them around that you can really see very distinctively that it's different, because the S22, they've completely redesigned the whole camera arrangement. It's less, I mean, hopefully people who are listening have seen some photos, because it's quite distinctive. It's not in like a single enclosure. And that's been a thing over years now, where those kind of rear sections have just grown in terms of protrusion and kind of got more and more annoying. Mm. I find when I'm reviewing phones that, you know, they're sat flat on a desk and they just wobble about absolutely everywhere. Now it's very much like individual camera sections that kind of poke out the back of the phone, but they're slightly better integrated into the back of the device, so it's less, there's less protrusion, and it gives it just like a real unique kind of look, which I personally really quite like, but I'm sure there'll be differing views on that.
And Chris, you had, I know before we started this conversation, recording this conversation, should I say, you had a thought about the Note.
Yeah. I mean, I
unleash the fury.
I wouldn't say that it was fury, but I would argue against this being a Note in disguise. And the reason I say that is because of this, the way that Note has evolved over those past few years, and the way that Galaxy S has kept growing and growing and growing. And when they started launching the Ultra phone, we immediately said, well, this is the same size. Like, what's the point in the Note? And then last year, the Ultra supported the S Pen as well. It didn't come with one. It didn't have one in the body, but it supported it anyway. So you got all of the functionality from the Note anyway. And it was clear that these two lines were going to run into each other, because the reason for the Note to exist suddenly evaporated when the Galaxy S moved into that same space. Because a lot of people loved the Note because it was a big display and it was bigger than everything else that was on the market. And it made sense because you were using the S Pen. Now, slowly we've evolved. As Mike said a few minutes ago, everything is getting bigger. Galaxy S got to that point where it was the same size as the Galaxy Note. And, you know, I looked at some of the Galaxy Note. So I didn't see the last generation, but I saw the generation before that. And I thought, well, this is great, but why is Samsung launching two flagship level products which are slightly different but slightly the same? Isn't this just confusing? So rolling the Note, which was always a smaller share of the market, into the Galaxy S makes perfect sense to me. So I don't see this as a Note. I see this as the Galaxy Note now just giving you the last function that was missing, which is the S Pen. And it's the interesting thing about the design, which Mike talked a little bit about, was that the new model is slightly squarer, and that allows them to accommodate that S Pen without there being a sort of curved corner where it's much more likely to knock the end of the button and the thing to come out of the housing.
Yeah.
Which was never there before. So, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense. If you want to use the stylus, you can. If you don't want to use the stylus, then just leave it in there. It will be interesting to see, actually, if case manufacturers have a case that completely covers over the end of the button, so that those people who decide that they don't want to use it never even have to think about it. They'll put the case on and completely forget that it has that function until 2 years later when they decide to sell their phone.
Like, oh my goodness, there's a pen in here. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about cameras. There seems to be a lot of focus on cameras. Certainly the Ultra has got 5 cameras on the back. Is that right?
Four
and a sensor.
Yeah, it looks like 5 because I think they have 5 individual circles from memory.
Yeah, they do.
And a wonderful term that Samsung banded around, which was nightography. Welcome to the world of buzzwords.
Oh, yes.
So do you want to talk us through this, Mike?
Nightography? Well, it's a buzzword, isn't it? Nightography is a wonderful way of marketing a thing that actually Samsung already did pretty well, which is taking photos in low light. So there are some improvements in that there's greater kind of optical stabilization that can improve the ability to take a photo in low light by counteracting some of the movements that you might make. How much difference that will truly make, I'm yet to see properly, because we haven't, you know, really held on to these devices and had proper, you know, explores of how well they'll handle low light situations. But, you know, I think to me it sounds like it'll be a moderate improvement on something that's already done pretty well. And, you know, I think Chris actually spent quite a long time comparing the previous camera to some other devices, so you may actually have an even deeper take on it than I do, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that it really is just the application of a name. Nightography, I think they just want to stand out and highlight the fact that their devices are slowly getting better at taking photos in low light conditions. It's debatable whether Samsung has been the best on the market in the past. Certainly there has been nothing wrong with them. There's a lot more emphasis now on the front camera now, and front cameras have been particularly weak at night photos. I think the Google Pixel has done fairly well on those because the whole thing is driven by software. But the descriptions they were making there about taking multiple shots and fusing them together and all of that kind of stuff, we've been hearing this for years and years. Mm. Huawei was one of the big proponents of that. And that must be, 4 years ago now or something?
Easily, yes.
I don't think that there's anything new here, even though they've put a new name on it and talked about it a lot and talked about the improved performance. I don't think there's actually any new technologies here. I just think it's going to be boosted performance. And ultimately, that means you point your camera at whatever you want to take a photo of, press the button and it happens. And you don't have to think about it. You just get a decent shot.
And that does feel some of the big messaging here from Samsung is trying to come up with like just buzzword bingo. There seemed to be a lot in the presentation about, you know, oh, it's got this, it's got this, it's got this, and it's got this, and it's got this, and it's, oh, it's also got this, and it's also, you know, and you're like, whoa, 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 even as technology journalists are kind of struggling to follow along as the, you know, the information was just fired at you at high speed. And looking at some of their advertising campaigns as well, it feels that message is clearly something that's going to run through. Do you feel, Mike, that that's something that consumers will struggle with, or have we just got used to that from Samsung now and you're just like, okay, great, it takes nice pictures in the dark?
I think we're kind of used to it from all makers. There's very much a how can you wrap up something that is performed in a kind of buzzy way, because all the competition probably do the same thing, so there's always kind of some buzzword around it. I think if it's handed out in tidbits, it shouldn't really matter. But I think part of the point also is it needs to be wrapped up in that way, because if you're comparing year on year, generationally speaking, there's not a massive, massive difference in these phones. So you need to kind of sell the product, right? I think that's the reasoning for it, is to give a different bunch of words to people to get excited about, even though what it's doing really isn't dramatically different to before, which isn't a bad thing because those phones were great. These ones also appear to be great too. But it's almost like a leveling of what to expect year on year, because there's only so much you can do. And clearly this year it's about marketing that rather well.
So the final word on from both of you on the phones before we move on, do we like what we've seen? Do you think it's going to sell well? Do you think it'll appeal to the wider Android audience?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm still going to go back to the Note thing, because I know me and Chris won't agree on this, but, or maybe we do in part. I kind of see, because the S22 Ultra has the S Pen stylus integrated within it, I kind of don't see that many people who are jumping to the S22 are going to want that. I don't really understand why you've got, you know, the S22 with a flat screen, the S22 Plus with a flat screen, and the S22 Ultra with a curved screen and a stylus integrated. Why that jump kind of happens? Surely they should all have a stylus, or none of them should. And why is it the introduction of the curved screen compared to not? I kind of feel like there are two series that could be had, one that's very much for those who always will use the pen and one for those who won't, because of the three, I'm most excited about the Ultra because I'd want the bigger phone, but that's just me. And I suspect a lot of people may think in a similar term to that. Having it there, okay, it's harmless. I doubt it costs too much in terms of production cost, but then it's not a cheap phone. So it's a little bit of a strange one. I feel like they're quite different devices. When you look at the 22 Plus against the Ultra, they're very different in size. They're kind of very different in camera layout and capabilities, and they feel like quite different devices to me overall.
I agree with some of the stuff that Mike's saying there, actually. I think the people who will be most excited are the people who have an old Galaxy Note, who think, well, I've been overlooked for the past, you know, couple of years. Oh, look, now there is a flagship device I can move to and take my love of the stylus with me. And on the flip side of that coin is all the people who just wanted a big phone, which is the most powerful, who are now sitting there facing their dilemma about, you know, what do I do with the S Pen? If you've never used it before, why would you want it? Because if you move from the Ultra down to the S22 Plus, there's a whole, you know, it's almost a completely different phone. You know, the core power is the same, but the cameras are different and the feel and the look is different. And it's not just a smaller version of the Ultra. There's quite a big divide there. So that might see some people who want a top tier phone just say, well, actually, I could buy the S21 Ultra instead, not think about the S Pen, might be a little bit cheaper. And that could be the way that they go. But, you know, it, for the first time, it does create this, or not quite for the first time, but it does definitely create this division between a top tier that does a whole load of stuff and the sibling device launched alongside it that is called exactly the same thing, almost exactly the same thing, that isn't completely related to it.
As well, I was kind of thinking also, because it's only about a month ago from recording this, that the S21 Fan Edition came out. So the whole kind of launch cycle process is even more confused, because that's a 6.4-inch phone, which sits in between the S22 and the S22 Plus. So you've kind of got this massive range now. And actually, the Fan Edition is not dramatically different. You know, it's slightly lower down the scale in certain areas, but to launch so much in such a sort of short product cycle time seems a bit strange. I'm kind of surprised that this Fan Edition ever did launch, to be honest, but I don't think it'll impact on the success of this range too much. But just kind of an interesting point that Samsung is covering kind of every eventuality.
Well, the good news is that we've got plenty of articles about what the differences are, what we think of the products, what's actually been announced, and all the other stuff on pocketlint.com. So if you need more on that, please visit the site. Now, let's move on to tablets. As you said, we've got an S8, an S8 Plus, and an S8 Ultra. So kind of similar breakdown, is that right? But just for a tablet experience.
Yeah, it's quite similar in terms of the sort of points of difference. So the Tab S8 and the larger Plus version are pretty much a reflection of the S7 and S7 Plus that came out in, I think, 2020. And then the Ultra is completely new. That's a totally new introduction into the range. It's slightly different by design because it's got a notched bezel because it's a dual front-facing camera. So that's
I'm sorry, what? There's a notch. On a Samsung tablet, there's a notch.
That is correct, yes.
I thought that this was the preserve of Apple.
Well, here's the thing, right? So this tablet is huge. It's 14.6 inches, which...
That's a big tablet.
Right? It's a big one. Apple, at the minute, the largest they make, I believe, is 12.9, right?
Yeah. On
the Pros. So I get a little inkling that this has kind of been launched as a, hey, we're here first. We're gonna bring out your... super extra large Apple tablet that hasn't been launched yet to show that Samsung's ahead and that Android can do this. Because there's been rumors for a while that Apple's going to launch a massive tablet, right? And it's a really different thing because it is big. Like it looks amazing in one regard.
It's kind of like almost A3 size, isn't it? I mean, that's huge.
I haven't quite got the dimensions in front of me, but maybe. The thing when I was holding it, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, it looks really nice, big AMOLED screen, it's bright, it's like really, really bright. I'm sure stuff would look amazing on it, but actually you're not going to buy that just to watch stuff. It's very much like, also it starts from like £999, it's £1,000. You're very much there to have, the S Pen is included again.
Surely it's with that size, it's tucks inside.
No,
how could it not like fit inside the thing?
The Samsung S Pen is kind of universal in that the S Pen you get in the phones is very sort of, you know, dinky. It's a little thing that pops in. On the tablets, it's much more like an actual pen, right? It's very much like an Apple Pencil. True. No, it magnetizes on the back. So this is universal across the range of their high-end tablets, though. There's an S Pen included in every Tab S8. But I think very much on the larger scale, you're either going to be buying it as a drawing tablet, you're going to be using the top-end power for lots of apps, or in theory, and I haven't seen these yet, but there's loads of accessories that can kind of transform into a kind of laptop alternative kind of replacement.
Into a table, surely, at that size.
Something like that.
A coffee table attachment.
Yeah.
I'm just not convinced that Android... or Samsung's UI has yet got the whole laptop replacement thing quite right.
And that's what I was going to say. That's the question, isn't it? Is that I know Google have sort of said that they're going to focus more on Android. We had the software update in the latest Android, didn't we, that kind of addressed larger screens, Chris. Do we feel from what we've seen so far, though, that apps are going to be able to cope from this? Or are you just going to end up running multiple windows in the hope that that gets you somewhere to productivity?
Because Android apps have always been quite good at scaling because they have to work across so many different types of device in all different form factors and stuff. So, they have always worked and people have always said, well, there's not enough apps designed for Android tablets. And you're like, well, that's because they kind of all work. But having said that, and that being the argument that iPad users always put over, we've got loads of dedicated apps that work much better. And that is also true. You know, the iPad looks more elegant. And there's obviously been a lot more thought gone into how the user interface works around the iPad compared to a bog standard Android tablet. And I say bog standard because this is Samsung and Samsung is different. Samsung has, you know, it tweaks its own UI. So Samsung has been a lot more advanced than most other Android tablets. And for many years, Samsung has done something on a tablet. And then you've found that other Android tablets can kind of do the same thing, you know. We shouldn't underestimate the amount of influence that Samsung's software development has on the rest of the Android ecosystem. So there are some things where I think it'll probably work really well. And I have used the Microsoft Office stuff or Google's own, Google Docs and stuff like that. And they all work really well. If you get a good keyboard and you've got a way of propping this thing up, I could see that some sort of kickstand integrated into a cover, keyboard cover, thing like that, you could probably use that perfectly well. But there are these little moments that occasionally that catch you out where you want to log into an app and that login screen only exists in portrait and you're working in landscape and everything's sideways and you're sort of sitting around looking at it thinking, really, is this still happening? And it kind of does happen, and it it will catch you out, and things that don't quite scale up, because I mean, obviously now we're talking about something that's massive, and if that doesn't work properly in landscape, you could be sitting there looking at something that's huge with huge text boxes in it, because nobody ever thought this is ever going to be used to such scale. So I don't think that Android tablets are as elegant. Of the Android tablets that I've used, Samsung has generally offered the best experience. It's hard to say whether there is parity with the iPad experience so far. And I think that's, you know, that's just a reflection of the market and the just the sheer volume of iPads that get sold against the number of Android tablets. I mean, let's not forget that most brands stopped making tablets, Android tablets, a couple of years ago, and are only just paying more attention now.
Yeah, which does give Samsung quite a big advantage, because they've been so much at the kind of top end of it. Whilst you were speaking, I was just looking up all the various accessories, and I haven't seen these, so I can't comment on exactly what they are. But it has a book cover keyboard, which presumably will be keyboard and cover in one. Book cover, probably just a protective cover. And then there's also a protective standing cover, which maybe is kind of like...
I think I saw that in the keynote. I think it's a cover, and then the front of it's see-through. It's like see-through perspex, so you can still see it, but it's got a cover.
So you could turn it upright and make it into a coffee table. Perfect.
Yeah, there we go. See? Right. Now, finally, on the software front, I know there was... Obviously, we talked about software there, and Chris, you're saying how Samsung does have a big influence on the industry. One of the interesting software announcements... aside for some new features within the watch, Samsung Galaxy Watch 4, was that they're now promising 4 years of Android updates. This sounds exciting. This sounds like it's going to have a dramatic effect on not only Samsung users, but also whether the industry will follow as a whole. And I noticed that really there was, apart from Google Duo, and a bit of mentioning for Microsoft for their Office products, Android really didn't get a mention at all in the keynote.
Well, yeah, that tends to happen. I mean, I heard Samsung drop in One UI several times. One UI 4 was mentioned. And as I said at the beginning of this, One UI 4 is something that we already have on Android phones. I mean, I've got a Samsung device on my desk at the moment that is running the same software that these run on. That's, you know, partly because Samsung has improved their update process as Android has all tried to speed everything up. And Samsung has gone from one of those companies where you're always waiting for an update to really leading the charge now. And everybody's sort of looking around saying Samsung's updated a lot of phones, because they have so many different models in the market and different versions around the globe. And they've managed to update at a pretty respectable pace. The moving to 4 years means that they're essentially extending the life of those devices. And that's 4 years of Android versions, as well as 5 years of security, because the core OS and the security updates are handled independently. And so that means that you should have a safe device from 5 years of, you know, from the initial launch date. So that's going to be 5 years from now. And that's impressive. The Android OS side of it, a lot of people get quite wound up about whether they have the latest version or not. In some cases, that doesn't make a huge difference, because, you know, all of the core apps for Android update independently from the actual OS version. So you could be running the latest version of Gmail on an older version of Android, and the experience would be pretty much identical. You wouldn't even know. So, yeah, it's great, because it means that you'll be able to buy your phone and have those new features in the future, or it means that somebody coming into the market and buying a used device will know that they've got several years ahead of them, rather than just buying something that's never going to be updated again. It's good, because Samsung now is not only updating quickly, but it's promising all of that future support. And Samsung is the biggest smartphone seller manufacturer in the world, so, you know, that's quite a big deal. But it does mean that everybody else in the Android space is going to be looking at this and thinking, okay, do we have to compete with that? What do we do now? One of the interesting things is that it's only these flagship devices from this year and last year that have been included in that promise from what we've seen so far. Whether that rolls down to the more affordable devices like Galaxy A series, for example, that is something that we're still waiting to establish, because that could make quite a big deal, because whilst Galaxy S is the flagship, Galaxy A sells a huge number of phones globally because they're much more affordable. And those are the devices that the users really want longer support, because they don't have the finances to just go out and buy a new phone because there's a new one on the market or they've run out of updates. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see whether Google responds. Google's currently doing 5 years of software and 3 years of OS updates on its own Pixel devices. Samsung has basically stepped up and said, this is the new standard.
And Mike, do you think that will have an impact on the rest of the industry?
It should well do. I mean, a lot of makers now are promising 3 years. It's not always a guarantee, but pretty much that. It may depend on who your customer is to some degree, because as Chris says, some people are extremely passionate. Others may not actually really notice or care that much. So there's probably a bit of a split line on that as to how much it matters. And quite a lot of people do get through phones pretty quickly, whether it's because they drop them and smash them or whatever. They may not repair them and just go and buy another one. Depends on the, you know, financials and general mentality. But yeah, we shall see. As Chris says.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Definitely something that these other companies are going to have to think about.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip, pip.